Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. We're doing we got a really fun one today. Along with this exclusive excerpt we'll be revealing from the Mouse Watch, we have the book's author with us, Jason Lethkoe, who has been, he has written actually a lot of books, but he's mainly known for his animation, directorial, and producer work for the Walt Disney Company and other places, which he's been doing for years and years now. But he's written this great, great book, The Mouse Watch, under a pseudonym, J.J. Gilbert. Hi, Jason. Thanks for taking some time.
Hi, nice to be here.
The Mouse Watch, sorry, is finally coming out next week. What's it about?
Well, you know, multifaceted question. But, you know, on the surface, it's basically about those furry little guardian angels that are watching over us that nobody knows about. And in their secret high-tech facility, these mice are basically saving the world right under our noses. And so the Mouse Watch is sort of a... I kind of call it a high-octane Men in Black sort of organization that is keeping another evil force at bay, the rats, which is the Rogue Animal Thieves Society, which would love to undermine humanity and our world as we know it. So thankfully they're there, keeping us safe. That's pretty much what the book is about. And then, of course, it's the journey of the main character, Bernie Skampersky, who's always wanted to be a member of this organization. She's kind of an outsider, and finds her way in, and then has to learn a lot about herself in the process.
Yeah, that's some of the language, like from some of the promotional language that you can find about this book, right? Especially the, it's been described, Mission Impossible meets Men in Black is what I think what they like to say the most about this book. Sure. But yeah, I have read it, and, you know, sure, that's appropriate, but I don't think that does this book enough justice. I mean, I think this book has much more heart, way more emotion than any of those films do.
Well, thank you. If we can scratch a little below the surface, which, you know, for me is a delight.
Yep.
You get the pat answer first, then you get the deeper answer second.
Well, of course. Yeah, for sure. You know? Yep.
But really, this had a lot to do with, I was channeling a lot of my personal journey as a, you know, and also Bernie is based in large part on my youngest daughter, Olivia. And, you know, knowing what it's like to want something really badly and to try to find your identity within it can, you know, it's a relatable quest. We're all looking for that. And I think we can be a little misguided sometimes in thinking we have to do it all alone and that the world will understand us better if we single ourselves or distinguish ourselves out from the rest. And it's a life lesson to learn that we're not really looking for that importance as an individual. I think what we're really looking for is how we relate to a group and where we can contribute to that group. So a lot of the themes in this book were really important to me about, you know, I used the idea of a watch being, you know, the sum of all of its parts, and that without one part working, the watch doesn't function. Mm-hmm. And why that was important to me is because, you know, at least for me, I know, being sort of that kid that was reading books on the playground while the other kids were doing other stuff, or trying to get in there socially and always struggling, you kind of go, well, you know what? What am I going to do with my life? How do I become important? How do I relate? And for artistic types, creative types, sometimes that's, I'll do the project or the thing that will bring that validation, make me feel like I belong as a person or have something to contribute. But boy, you can really get on a path of thinking that in order to prove yourself worthy, it'll be this project or that project or this validation or that one, when really it's about the other people in your life that you form relationships with that make the whole difference. I believe it's why we're here. I think it's all about relationships and finding good friendships and letting that guard down, so that you can actually just be doing what you were born to do, but it's no less important or bigger than what anyone else has to.
Well, that was beautiful. And I wish you had to save that till the end, because that would have been a great way to go out on, but.
Sorry.
it's a beautiful way to put it. And that's kind of what I was getting at with that question. This book is a lot of fun. It's zany. There's a ton of cool tech and gadgets in it. And, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had for sure. But everything you just said is bang on. And you know, the thing with Bernie Skampersky, the lead mouse character in this book, you know, she's she's like anybody else, you know, we just want a purpose in life. And short of sort of any real, a lot of us don't have some of the skills maybe that you, even you do, Jason, like I can't draw at all. I couldn't draw a straight line to save my life, or, you know, there's all these things that we're good at. And, you know, with Bernie, her incredibly important trait, which she almost dismisses kind of early on, is courage. She's got tons of courage. That will to act is such an important part. And the excerpt that we're revealing on the website here is they gave us chapter 4. And that's really, you know, that's a really important chapter because it's sort of ripped from most any coming of age story. The young heroes, you know, go to head out the door for the first time in search of adventure to fulfill their destiny. And then Clarence and Beatrice, her parents, play such an important part. You know, sounds like you with maybe your daughter, you just want them to be safe, but at some point you got to just cut the cord, you know?
Well, it's true. And unfortunately life, you know, is full of hard knocks, and courage, I would say, is essential, but I think it's the courage to fail. It's the fact that you're going to fail. And often you're not the chosen one. You're not the Harry Potter of this life. And it's difficult coming out from the bubble in your home where you're treated like one. And then suddenly going out of the world and going, well, wait a minute, I'm maybe not the main character in this story. I might be this side, you know, interesting, maybe an interesting side character. But more importantly, I think life's a great teacher. And I think for myself, the parallel between both being a parent to my daughter and also looking at my own life when I was young. When I was about 17, I wanted to work for Disney so badly. I mean, it was sort of my big dream. And I came from a very small school and didn't really know what it took back then. Kind of, this is the 80s. So, you know, internet was really not there. So you put a portfolio together, you drop it off, and you just hope that it's got the ingredients in it that would get them to call you back. And Disney did call me back. And my dad, I remember, handed me the phone. It's Disney on the phone. And, my heart's pounding, you know. I'm just going, oh, here it is. This is the dream. Suddenly, finally, you're going to get plucked out of obscurity and given a chance. And actually, at that time, it was a very different time than, you know, in Disney history, but maybe it was this particular guy, but the guy in charge of human resources called me to say, you haven't got a chance. He made a point to call to say, I often encourage people to go to school, but in your case, I wouldn't. and so as that, you know, the phone kind of dropped from my hand, you know, I put it back and I was just sitting there stunned and I just was crushed. I thought, well, I guess this means not only is that dream not for me, but I am actually stupid to be dreaming of it. And, you know, my dad spoke into my life and just said, you know, he was so different. My dad was a businessman, you know, but he said, if this is what you want to do, you just need to not give up and just, you know, have the courage to keep going. So rather than being met with any sort of encouragement, it was, you are not the right stuff. You're not the material. So I just buckled down and I just said, okay, well, I'm going to learn it. And when I did finally get a break, it was at a different studio initially that, I mean, I think about it now, you know, and I had every reason not to keep going because I had taken a test. I'd been given an animation test to see if I could get in as an in-betweener. And after taking the test, I got a phone call from the studio saying, you have an unusual style, but you know what you do seems raw and it seems like you've got this natural ability. Let's give you a chance. And I was really excited. I came in and then immediately my first week, the production person in charge came over and said, yeah, you shouldn't even be here. Your portfolio was supposed to be on the do not call pile. So once again, I went, oh no, I'm here by accident. I don't deserve to be here. I had to fight those messages to go, well, but I am here. So therefore I'm going to learn and do everything I can to, you know, pick myself up, dust myself off and prove to myself that I can do it. So I can relate to this character in that way because she's, you know, she's a scrapper. She won't give up. And if there was one thing I want to do in part, you know, especially to the readership, the age group for this group, is to not give up at your first rejection. I mean, ever since I've, you know, taken that stand in myself to go, I'm going to do this and I will just work really hard. It does teach you humility, but the courage to fail is important because you will fail often. It sounds cliche, but you do. But it's all about, what did I learn? How do I listen? How do I brush myself off and find the confidence to keep going?
See, if your life was a movie, there'd be a scene where you are at Disney, the conquering hero, years later, and you walk by that HR jerk.
I did.
No.
And that did happen. That's the movie.
Isn't that funny?
Yes, it did happen.
Oh, wow.
You know, I had a choice to make at that point.
Because yeah.
When I finally got there and I was on the Little Mermaid, you know, and I'm on the Prince Eric crew, and I finally made it in as an in-betweener and began that journey through this company that I've just loved. And, you know, for the most part, with the exception of him, it's been a fantastic experience the whole time. But I ran into him and I thought, oh, this is, I have this moment here where I could say, do something. And instead, I decided to just be really kind of honest and just go, I don't know if you remember, you know, a long time ago, I gave a portfolio and I guess, you know, you thought I shouldn't be here. I said, but you know what? I took that as incentive to get here. Hmm. And he said, well, it looks like you made it. I walked on. But for me, it was enough to go. I mean, it wasn't that poetic. Like,
right. You're
let's
like,
let's go around and get a coffee.
You're like, duh. Like, yeah.
You know, okay, kid, you know, you beat the odds. There was no reward.
Right, but right.
Internally, there was. There was
sure,
a sense of, you know what, I have that 17-year-old in me that had worked so hard. It's like, okay.
Well, that's, right. Yeah, that's, see, that's a great, you know, the parallels between that and Bernie, or your life and Bernie, or if once people read the book, will be certainly clear and obvious. And that's one of the things too, it might confuse folks. We're talking about the story in with like a real world sensibility, but that's what it has. It has this universal, this universal appeal to this story that's really earnest in a really great way, especially Bernie, who thought she was recruited for one reason, but it turns out it was for a different reason. And then yeah. like you said, sort of like, well, fine, you didn't want me for that, but I'll show you and I'll work even harder. And sounds very similar to your path.
There's a lot of truth.
Yeah.
A lot of truth in that.
Yeah.
And yet Jarvis, on the other hand, I look at and I go, you know, and here is a person that we all can be too sometimes. And though I wasn't, he's one of those people that's extraordinarily gifted, you know, where I don't believe I was gifted. I think I just had to work really hard and do a lot with a little. Mm-hmm. He's brilliant,
right.
But his circumstances makes him lack the confidence he could have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as an appealing character, that he has a gentleness of spirit and a kind-heartedness that he's a little further along than Bernie, in that he's less selfish. And I think that ultimately that relationship's a core part of this series, and being able to have, if you're gifted much, sometimes you can be complacent, but he's a different character that way. He's not, it's more like, well, I know what it is to be gifted, but he also knows what real life is about, and it's substance and people and caring for others. So he's a little more enlightened. Has to put up with her a little bit.
Sure. And it's, you know, the character we're talking about here, Jarvis, and it's not a spoiler to say that Jarvis is actually a rat, not R-A-T-S rat, but an actual rat.
Actual rat.
Yeah. Who joins the Mouse Watch, or is recruited by the Mouse Watch. And like Bernie, has dealt with incredible tragedy in his life, just like she has. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what we're talking about is how they deal with it differently. And talk about how important sort of like that's their relationship is key in this book, especially when it comes to Bernie's arc. I think like when people read this book, they're going to love Jarvis as much as I do. And, and Bernie too, for sure. And again, you know, like you said, Jarvis is further along. So Bernie's got to take her lumps a little bit first. Right. So just talk about how important their relationship is.
Well, you know, Jarvis, well, two things, you know, I'm trying to be careful about the spoiler part, but Bernie's case, she had had a brother who meant a lot to her, and isn't ready for a surrogate. So Jarvis represents, you know, a threat in a twofold manner. Number one, you're a rat. So on paper, the book says the rats are the enemy. So I must not accept you, you know. Also in her journey, it's, oh, you're better at something that I had found identity in. You know, Bernie thinks herself a natural, you know, gifted riddle breaker, code breaker, and he's even better. And so it's like, oh, there's another threat. And of course, you know, the last part is that when she's paired with him, you know, she sees him as competition and really needs to see him as an ally. And I think we get people in our lives that are, you know, put in front of us for a reason. And more often than not, we can learn something from almost everyone. And I don't know about you, but there's people that come along in your life that you may not start off being great friends with and come to find that friendship later and how important it can be. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot to their relationship. It goes deep. And I've always seen this, you know, Mouse Watch series, should it go beyond three books, something fairly vast. I mean, I see that journey as one of our human journeys, and the books could go on and on should they find a receptive audience. Mm-hmm. Because that relationship, you said it, it's the key to this whole thing. And where they go with this, it's sort of a lifetime journey.
You know, one of the great things you do in this book is the world building is incredible. And that's, it's easy to make the world seem bigger when you are zooming in on it. It's, you know, one of the great things too, that's great about this is, you know, when you do zoom in like this, when you do look at the world through a microscope, details become even more important. So, and I would think this is where you being an animator and a producer and a director really comes into play, I'd imagine. So, you know, as humans, we don't see that these details that these mice and rats and other creatures see. Talk about that a little bit, just sort of creating this world, you know, through a microscope.
The feeling you have when you're young and you're, you know, on your belly in the carpet and you've got a Hot Wheels car or some Legos and seeing the world from that perspective, I've always found to be something kind of magical. And, you know, my hope was just in broad strokes to go, well, when we come down to that level, what do we see, and what would it be like for, you know, these tiny people, like great books like The Borrowers have done and other ones that just you go, oh, there's just something so magical about what can a thimble be in a mouse village, or what can some, you know, action figure toys become. And then to conversely find it within the Mouse Watch that the technology is there and far beyond what we can do, that they're more advanced than we are and can actually miniaturize current and future tech. Well, it's just a playground, isn't it? I mean, it's like something you just go, well, that's too much fun to play with. And this is where, you know, and it, you know, sometimes I hate these like digressions that you hear as sort of like, oh, now you have to thank everybody that helped you with this, and that's just what you do is to keep everyone happy. In this case, I have to really thank my editor, Jocelyn, who challenged me and kept going, oh, I want to know more about that little world. Can you show me more? Can you tell us more about what could be in there? And so in world building, again, having others that help you by asking those questions and wanting to see more forces your imagination to go further. I don't think this world would be what it could be without the help of the people that on that editorial team at Disney, because, man, they were good. I mean, they're just good, and it really helped the book become better.
You know, there's several moments in the book when you really get lost in the story and you forget, you know, like a lot of good movies do, especially animated films. You forget that you're reading a story about mice and rats. You know what I mean? You forget that. Occasionally, though, you do sort of pull us back, you know, with either like a cheese mention or some other mouse trope of some type. Sure. Because it is, you know, it is a fun book about mice, doing these crazy things. Was that something you was on your mind, like this that balance between their world and ours?
Sometimes, I mean, they, you know, when you the thing is when you really love and believe in your characters, they just take on this people quality, this human quality. Sometimes, you know, you forget that they're a human in a fursuit, that they're a little mouse, but the feelings are real. Mm-hmm. And if you try to be transparent and, you know, vulnerable, you're trying to pour as much as of that as you can into them. And coming from animation, which really was both my job and my school, I think a lot of the way I write, for me, it's like watching an animated film in my head. So I'm trying to write the words down to describe what I'm seeing as quickly and as efficiently as I can while that movie's rolling. So I'm doing my best to describe the world. And so, yeah, there are times that, you know, I've actually dreamed about the characters and I'm sitting and talking with them. They become that dimensional after a while.
Yeah.
So it's a fascinating thing, isn't it? It's kind of, it really is kind of magical because it can make you forget that it's not real. And I guess that's the best magic trick of all.
I will just give credit where credit is due. That's what Disney, they did it before anybody else. I mean, when you watch these great, the classics, even up until today, you know, when you're watching these amazing, incredible animated, you know, series or films, and, you know, your brain at first is like, this is an animated film. These blocks are talking. takes no time before your brain adjusts and you become immersed in that world. And what seems insane a second ago seems completely rational. You know,
it's funny too. Yeah. I mean, having worked in the animation industry now about 30 years or so, I've seen a few times where different studios I'd worked at, there would be mail coming in addressed to characters that, you know, you'd go, on the one hand, you know that the person writing it, if they're not a little kid,
right,
is somewhat aware that this is not, these are drawings, but also there's a little part of them that's yearning for some other dimensional quality to it that I'm connecting with probably the truth of the people behind it and looking for a relationship or looking for connection. And it's really fascinating that it's that kind of art form, that it can create that illusion of reality.
Well, that's the goal, I assume. I mean, if they're drawn, illustrated, or animated well, and the character is developed, designed, written well enough, that's got to be the goal at the end of the rainbow, right? If you can trick a human into thinking, no matter big, small, young, old, that, you know, that character exists, whether it's in their dreamscape or not. I mean, that's it, right? I mean, that's the gold medal. So,
well, it's funny too. Even today, if I'm drawing, you know, Mickey Mouse or working on some of these things, there's a certain awe I still have thinking of the other hands that have drawn these characters and doing my very best to add to the conversation. But knowing that in a way the character exists beyond me, it's something else. It's especially with Disney. Those characters are so memorable and so believable. We feel like we know them.
100%. I mean, I'm 44 years old. I cry all the time, you know, at fictional, whether it's reading or watching or whatever. And it affects you. These things affect you when they're done well. And sometimes even when they're not done well, they still affect you. It depends. A lot of times it depends on perspective and what's going on in your own life. But, you know, like I said, I got emotional a couple times in this book. And how can you, just because some of the moments are so pure and honest, it's like, if you can't find a way to relate to any one of these characters, and I don't know what to tell you. you're not from this planet, I guess. I don't know. You know, speaking of characters, every great story needs a great villain. And we've got a great one here in Dr. Thornpaw, whose methods are definitely less than desirable. But I got to say, I don't entirely disagree with, you know, the reasons why he's doing what he's doing. And really reminded me of a great, I'm sure you've seen it, Secret of Nim is one of my favorite.
Oh, wasn't that great?
It is one of my favorite movies, period, to this day. And, you know, I see some similarities sort of in Dr. Thornpaw's.
Sure.
Reasons, right, are obvious, and there's some stuff going on there. But I'm not saying this was a direct influence for you or not. But talk about a bit about sort of like the inspirations and influences. Obviously, Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, obviously.
Sure. Direct. Although that came a little later for me. I knew Chippendale, and I think this started with my love for the Rescuers and thinking about how do you bring this current, and then. Part of it was when Disney said, hey, have you also taken a look at the Rescue Rangers? And I did. And once I saw this Gadget Hackwrench character, I just loved her. I thought, oh, what a great, I wanted to be an inventor when I was really young. And I thought, oh gosh, I love this character. So
you in Russia, apparently, have you heard about this cult? In Russia? I had not heard of it until just, you know, read the book. Yeah, it's a thing.
It's a thing, and who knew? You know, I found out about that later too and went, oh my gosh, wow.
Isn't so, that, yeah.
You know, she's great though, and a definite example of, you know, kind of an icon, and mm-hmm. it was good to build around that. But when it came to the villain, I think for me it was every good villain is basically a person like all of us who's been injured and takes that injury as a personal vendetta for revenge or a misguided approach to feel better about themselves mm-hmm. through finding again, it comes back to identity, doesn't it? I mean, even the worst villains in history believed in what they were doing, but often because it was a narcissistic goal, a wounded goal. And it meant often, I don't need other people. I'm the most important person here or in the room. So every villain usually is stumbling because they can't get past the hurt or wound they've suffered, and they take it out on everyone else sure. as a way to make themselves feel better. So he was a victim, but he chose to almost revel in the victim identity to become the villain he is.
Right. Way. I got a weird like Magneto vibe too with him, especially near the end when he was like, because with him it's not rats versus mice, it's animals, not even animals, but whatever mm-hmm. versus human.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
In a way, you can't blame him, right?
No,
but at the same time, you do.
No, well, that's the thing is like. Yeah, no, it's like, you can't really blame Thornpod on that one there, can you? Sure. Like I said, we all wish his methods were different, because he is intelligent, and we wished.
Yeah, and I feel like he could have been, had he chosen a slightly different way.
Yeah.
A vital part of the Mouse Watch.
Sure.
But right. He just couldn't see it. He couldn't see beyond his own, you know, suffering.
Yeah, he's a great villain, and like all good villains, he's complicated, and there's more going on there that reveals itself as you get to the end of the book, so we won't spoil that definitely, but it's a really cool sort of, this goes to the world building that you've created, and it's really yeah. fun, and it's a really, really great, the epilogue is fantastic in this book, and
thank you.
One of the things too I wanted to ask about before we let you go is what's your name generator, man? Because there's how do you come up with these names? Because there's a lot. Number one, there's a lot of names in this book. Because again, part of the world building is you've established that there's a really long history to this organization that goes back. I think it was over 100 years. In that retelling, you have names, and then there's of course this large this Mouse Watch group is massive. And what did you? How did you come up with all these names?
You know, it's I've always, you know, there's not many things I would say, I guess, if I were just being really clear with my own gifts. I hesitate there, but there are certain things I can do better than others. And I think for some reason, names came pretty naturally to me.
Even Craddock McMunster?
Yes. I just like the sound of those things that go together, you know. I don't know why.
That's my personal
favorite, but there's a little Munster on all of us. Also there's something that's when I approach a world building, you know, story that I can fall in love with, I want to imagine, if I'm imagining distant mountains and things that I would love to see, it's that it's so vast that it could be a role-playing game or something where people could one day bring themselves into a world that had levels to it and that could be added to by other people that could get involved with it and identify with it and take it on and move it. So in the world building, I guess I try to create enough. I like that word distant mountains because it's like, oh, wait a minute. If this little side character here matters or is mentioned, Maybe he's got his own lineage too. And that goes back here and could take you down this path or that path. And things get more fun and more vast until, you know, you feel like there's a universe to explore. And that being a part of that, just getting to be a spark plug for that kind of universe, is something that could be, you know, really satisfying just to share it on any level. But that kind of level in my mind is what attracted me to games or books or animation. I always liked wondering what was behind that corner or what's that door lead to. And, you know, it led to my doing a lot of adventuring in real life. That, you know, I wanted to investigate things like ghosts and Bigfoot, time travel and alchemists, and I'd done all that. And so I want that curiosity to be there in the stories. My hope is that the names provoke curiosity too, and people go, oh, I wish I knew more about that guy.
I love the, a lot of the, you know, again, the tropey stuff, but just, you know, the real world, you know, sort of like her dad's an accountant. And they have a bank. Yes. They have a bank, right? Like they have their own bank and stuff. And it's just sort of funny. I thought I got a real kick out of that world building aspect too. And that helped. And again, that helps you just immerse you even more, right? So
if you're looking for seed money in the mouse world, you don't have far to travel.
That's right. Mouse Watch comes out November 3rd. After the follow-up has already got a date and everything. The Mouse Watch Underwater comes out May 4th next year. It looks like more of the same sort of fun and hijinks, and that's online. You can already pre-order it now. That's great. Anything you can tell us about Underwater that maybe isn't revealed in the promotional language at all, or you know, you want to just save that for the
weekend? I lived on a boat for a year and a half, and during that time, I met a few unusual people that lived on boats as well, and one of them was a guy who was at work for JPL, and I came home. You know, after driving to Disney from Ventura, long drive, came home, it was dark, and I'm walking down the dock, and I saw him hunched over the side of the dock. I thought, oh, he's sick. I said, John, are you okay? And he looked up with this half-crazed expression, and he had on some sort of wired thing in his ears that went down in the water. He goes, I've invented a hydrophone. And he's talking about all the sea things that he's listening to under there. And again, his personality and being another kind of crackpot inventor started me down a road of going, well, the sea is vast and filled with mysteries. What could you do with this kind of story and inventiveness and take it underwater? And I think, it led to another romp.
Yeah, that one sounds like a lot of fun as well. So that comes out May 4th, 2021. You can pre-order it now. Again, Mouse Watch comes out November 3rd. Jason, I can't thank you enough for this. I'll speak for myself. I really enjoyed it. So kids are definitely going to love this book. And I think parents are going to enjoy it right along with them. Great moments, especially with Bernie and her parents and some really just honest moments. And I think all parents can relate to that, you know, that letting go, you know, their child into the bigger world. And especially with all the stuff that's going on in the world now, who couldn't use a little story about, you know, the bonds that are sometimes can bend but never break between a child and their parents. So I think
nicely said.
I think the timing of this release is probably pretty damn close to perfect.
Oh, thank you, Steve. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.